Hours after the Easter Sunday bombings in Sri Lanka, the country's government blocked popular social media sites, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The government said the move was to prevent the spread of false information. Sri Lanka is the latest in a growing list of countries that have taken aim at social media for fomenting hatred and mob violence, and who have flipped the off switch on major social media sites in the aftermath of turmoil or terror. Amanda Taub is a reporter for The New York Times who's been covering this, and she's with me now. Welcome to The Takeaway, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
So when I heard the latest in Sri Lanka, I just kept thinking, what is the impact of something like that? I mean, does it actually curb misinformation, or is it more of a tool for the government to sort of control what's happening in the moment?
I think the answer may be both. So it certainly has a chilling effect on all kinds of communication in Sri Lanka because these social media platforms are really ubiquitous there. When I went there to report a story a year ago, I was really struck by how much people were using social media for basically all communication. It was their way of messaging friends. It was their way of getting news. It was their way of, you know, getting entertainment. It was really everywhere. This is not the first time the government has blocked it. They blocked it a year ago as well for similar reasons. And one of the things that quickly became very clear was that a lot of people were able to get around the block. I heard some estimates that it was only about 50% effective because people got VPNs in order to circumvent.
Now, what exactly is our government's trying to do? I mean, we know, particularly in the case of Sri Lanka here, is the goal, as they stated, to try and stop the spread of misinformation. But that almost, and I say this all the time when it comes to this type of, really controlling information online, it feels like a game of whack-a-mole.
I think that's absolutely true. So I think that the government was really drawing on the experience of a year ago when anti-Muslim riots broke out in the country. Several people were killed. A lot of homes and businesses were burned, and the violence was really horrible. And that seemed to have really been first fomented on social media by spreading rumors about Muslims trying to kill members of the Sinhalese Buddhist majority, and then actually planned and kind of instigated using these social media platforms. So, you know, maybe people would first become angry about what they saw on Facebook, but then they switched to these large groups on platforms like WhatsApp. And that was where we saw, you know, photos circulating of what weapons people were gathering and things like that. So I think that the government was hoping to avoid repetition of the violence that happened last year after the Easter attacks that just occurred there. And I think everyone would probably agree that when it comes to stopping misinformation, this kind of immediate response is probably a bit late because these bans are porous. It probably also wasn't a complete stop. But it may have had an impact on people's ability to use these platforms to actually plan or instigate real-world violence.
Well, and also could have had an impact on people's ability to plan to leave or to get out of a dangerous environment. Is that right? And also potentially journalists and getting information, good information out to individuals, or does one outweigh the other, I guess?
So I think that is absolutely the question here. I mean, it is the question with regulation of all speech is how much of the kind of what might be dangerous or bad do you allow in order to make sure that people have open channels to share good information? And I think that social media is a huge and unsolved challenge in that regard. Nobody has figured out how to draw that balance yet. And because it tends to come to the fore in dangerous emergency situations like this one, I think that it's very difficult to set precedents that will kind of work across the board for non-emergency situations.
Amanda, Sri Lanka is not alone. There have been shutdowns in other places like India and Indonesia. Can you give us a sense of what those decisions were based on?
In India, there have been a number of shutdowns, particularly partial ones that affect certain platforms or certain regions. And they have often been an effort to kind of stop exactly this sort of, you know, process by which misinformation triggers real world violence, particularly communal violence. So in India, years ago, they they've been having this problem for a while, including some misinformation that spread years ago about riots in Assam that then triggered communal violence in a completely different part of the country because of misinformation about what had happened elsewhere. And so I think that really what you're seeing is that because this kind of, you know, misinformation, hate speech, sectarian conflict really flourishes on social media, when it happens to encounter some sort of real world event that can spark violence, you know, in a way the problem has already occurred. So they can shut down the platforms at that point, but by the time they know they need to do that, the information is usually out there already.
What's the responsibility of Facebook in this, for example, or WhatsApp, or any of these platforms to manage this on their own?
So the thing that I always start with is that they themselves have terms and conditions that state that hate speech and instigation to violence and things like that are against their terms and conditions. You know, it's actually not allowed on the platform. They have agreed to that. They're just not enforcing it. And that's certainly a challenging problem. But it is a problem of resources and a problem of priorities. And I think until very recently, this is not something that was seen as important enough to really get the resources and get the prioritization that things like global growth in, you know, users and user time have.
Amanda Taub is a reporter with The New York Times. Thanks for being with us, Amanda.
No problem. Thanks for having me.